Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Data and analytics plays a pretty large role, especially in the modern era of soccer, whether that be player development, transfers, or in itself, club growth. So today I'm joined by Jordan Gardner, who is the co-chairman and co-owner of FC Helsinger, which is in the first division of Denmark, which is actually the second tier to the Danish Superliga, but still a club that is exhibiting growth for player development. So Jordan, how are you doing today?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, Kyle.
Jordan, just for everyone's kind of benefit, what would you describe your role as with FC Helsinger? And also, I know you previously worked, or maybe currently work, with Swansea and Dundalk. So kind of talk about your roles in soccer over the years leading up to now with Helsinger.
Yeah, so my main project is I'm the chairman, co-owner, and managing partner of FC Helsinger, as you mentioned. What does that mean? I'm in charge of all the day-to-day operations of the club. I lead the investment group that runs the club. We've been in Denmark for 3.5 years, and certainly it's been a challenge, being a foreign investor in European football, but we've had a lot of success. We got ourselves promoted once up to the Danish First Division. We've been in the top four the last two seasons, and last season we were actually in first place for almost the whole season. Unfortunately, we narrowly missed promotion. So it's been a fun project being more of a medium-sized to smaller club in Europe. On a personal level, I also have some smaller investments in European football. I'm a very small shareholder in Swansea City, as you mentioned. And then I was a shareholder with Dundalk and on the board of that club in Ireland. But we exited our investment about 6 months ago, so I'm not involved with that anymore. So that's my story.
I'm curious why you chose Helsinger and a team in the second tier of Denmark as opposed to a club in England. I mean, Swansea, of course, second tier of England right now. But why not a club maybe in the lower tiers of England or maybe anywhere else in, say, Germany or Spain where there are maybe more established clubs to invest in?
Yeah, I mean, I think when we were looking at clubs and markets, Denmark was really and has been a growth market. And we were looking someplace where there was a lot of potential from a player sales and player development perspective. And that's not to say that doesn't exist in some of the bigger leagues, but being honest, the cost of entry to get into some of the bigger leagues is prohibitive. I mean, to get into the championship now in the UK, for instance, you're talking 40, 50, 60 million euros. And obviously, the second tier in Denmark is a fraction of that cost. So for kind of the entry points we were looking at, for the characteristics we were looking at, Denmark made the most sense. Some of the other markets, Germany has ownership restrictions on foreign investment, so that kind of ruled that out. Spain and Italy are markets we've looked at, but we wanted a market where it wasn't as competitive, right? That it wasn't like every single ownership group was trying to do the same thing. And that's my challenge a little bit right now with the UK, especially with Brexit, and that every group is kind of doing the same thing. There's no creativity in terms of markets where you can bring in talent or different ways to look at recruitment. And we felt that Denmark was a good spot that we can kind of experiment and try something new. And I think it's, over 3.5 years, it's definitely proven to be the right market for what we want to do.
Do those same kind of factors in your decision to go to Helsinger, did that kind of come into play? Why not a club in the U.S. and MLS or USL? Was it the same kind of thing, barriers to entry related to cost? Or did you really want to focus on Europe for that, for your goals?
Yeah, I mean, on a personal level, I'm more interested in European football. I think, obviously you have a very different system, which I'm sure a lot of the viewers understand the differences. But, for me, coming from an entrepreneurial background, I'm more interested in the ability to add value from an ownership group. You can get a club promoted. There's much more robust domestic player sales going on in Europe. There's clubs that are just not run as well as maybe some businesses in Europe, in the United States. So there's opportunities there. So I know a lot of people who invest in American soccer and I have a lot of respect for them. It's just not the way I look at things. And I do think on a personal level, the valuations are at a point now where you're talking hundreds of millions of dollars to get an MLS. You're talking even now in the second division, the USL, you're talking $15, $20 million. And I think those are price points that don't make a whole lot of sense to me.
And Jordan, I see you're wearing the U.S. men's national team, the jumper. How important is American soccer to you in your time with Helsinger? I think I read somewhere that you already mentioned it, like player sales is a big part of it. And I'm curious, is American players, does that play any role in your day-to-day operations with Helsinger? Do you try to actively seek out American players?
So when we first got to Denmark, we definitely talked a lot about bringing in American players because, you know, in the division we're in Denmark, there's no foreign player restrictions. So it's a good spot to bring in foreign players. We ran into a bunch of challenges, mainly COVID-19 in terms of, having any sort of sophisticated scouting infrastructure in North America and the movement of players when borders are closed. So we really had to kind of pivot, and we pivoted much more to a more domestic kind of Scandinavian based recruitment strategy. And we won games and we got promoted and we were doing really well. And so we have brought over American players, but not at any sort of scale. The other issue that we run into is being a smaller club. You know, it's difficult for us to bring American players that have, that are at kind of top A level players. You know, the top national team players are obviously going to bigger leagues that have that have more money that can pay the players. So I think we were looking at more second, third, and fourth tier players. And the level is quite high in a place like Denmark. And some of the players we brought over weren't good enough for the level. That's not to say there aren't players in Americans that are doing quite well in Europe. But I think for us and our particular strategy at this particular club, it didn't make a lot of sense. But that being said, I think over the last 3 years, the whole strategy that we had in our head of bringing American players to Europe has panned out at other clubs. You're seeing what's happening at Leeds right now. I think the quality of American players, certainly at the top end, is growing immensely. And to see what those guys are doing, Preden Aaronson, those kind of players at the top levels in Europe, is really impressive. I think the next wave, maybe over the next 5 years, is to see more players in leagues in Belgium, Holland, Denmark, having a lot of success and just more scale at that level.
So you talk about Helsinger's change from American to more Scandinavian roots. One thing I want to ask you about is your general goals with Helsinger. You talk about how the club was so close to promotion to the Super League of this past season. They already had promotion in previous seasons. But then you also focus on things like player sales. So as an owner and as a chairman, how would you kind of divvy up your objectives with the club? Is it, I want to focus on player sales? I think the promotion is obviously the end goal, especially for the fan base. But as the chairman and the owner, how important is like dividing up your preferences from player sales to things like on the pitch success?
It's a good question. I think every club in European football has to understand that they have to sell players, because if you don't sell players, you're already looking at a significantly loss-making business, be much worse. And so I think, ideally it's a 50-50 split in terms of having a strategy where you can develop and sell players and then have the next batch of players come in behind them that can replace them. And we, this summer is a good example for us. We sold four of our best players this summer, and we had a little bit of a dip in form, but as the new players came in, the guys who hadn't played a lot last year came in, we've really won four out of our last five games, and they've kind of taken the reins. And so it's a difficult balance. We had this discussion in the winter window last year when we were in first place and only lost one game through the first 21 to say, we have offers on our players. If we sell all our best players now, the probability of us getting promoted goes down significantly. So it's a little bit like a case by case basis. We realized at that time we decided not to sell any players, but that this summer was the right time to kind of retool. Obviously it also comes down to the prices and the economics of each ownership group. But for us, the goal is to get to the Danish Superliga. And, I think I'm proud that we were able to sell some players at good prices and compete for promotion, but it's a difficult balance, and you can't always necessarily pick the right spot. But I think it's all, like I said, it's really about contingency planning too. If you don't have players lined up to replace the players you've sold, you're in real trouble.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Jordan, correct me if I'm wrong here, but a lot of that in regards to player sales and trying to find the right price to sell them at, a lot of it does come down to data analytics, trying to find players that can fill in a way that is cost effective, but you won't see too much of a dip in on-the-pitch success. Talk about the importance of data and analytics to Helsinger and clubs in Europe. We see Brentford right now competing in the Premier League and competing well using this kind of money ball technique where they, you know, find players that maybe other clubs don't value as highly, but they still can compete at a high level. So in regards to your club, how important is data analytics and just using the new era of technology to get the best out of teams?
Look, it's very important to us. I think the challenge we have is being a smaller club. We don't have this huge in-house data analytics department. You know, Brentford, Brighton, these kind of clubs, even though they're not top five clubs necessarily over the long run in the Premier League, they have in-house data teams. You know, they're owned by guys who own betting companies. Their background is entirely data. And so for us, it's trying to be just as sophisticated as we can. You know, do we use more open source data sources? Obviously, everyone uses YScout, but is it a stats bomb? Is it a smarter scout? You know, these are kind of more tools that a lot of clubs use. And can we find specific pieces of those tools that we can do things a little bit differently? We obviously don't have the resources to have a full in-house data analytics team for a club of our size. But the simple fact is so many clubs don't value data in European football. And the fact that we just simply value it gives us a leg up. And I think the other area that we really focus on is not simply just data in recruitment, because I think that is as important, but that's what most people think. It's player performance, health and wellness, injury prevention. We've looked at the data pretty significantly in those areas and done things well beyond what a club of our size normally does when it comes to the other areas, even business analytics when it comes to our commercial side. And so, you know, for us, it's always about what can we do within the limited resources of being at the small club. You know, for me, someday, hopefully being at a bigger club, it's exciting to think what we could do with the resources of a bigger club. And, you know, there are examples, like we mentioned, out there of clubs doing it well, but 98% of the clubs don't do it well or don't value it at all.
Why do you think that is? Why do those clubs with seemingly unending resources avoid data at a rate that would be so beneficial to them? And is there a reason for that? Are they just being ignorant? Or what do you think?
This business is still very old school. You have people that have been around for many, many years, and they're very resistant to change. And whether that's people on the sporting side or on the ownership side or directors and CEOs of clubs, it's a very relationship driven business. And there's still many clubs that, instead of having a sophisticated data algorithm for recruitment, they're going to call up the three, you know, friends who are agents, and the agents are going to tell them which players to sign. I mean, this happens at some of the biggest clubs in the world still. So, why does that happen? I wish I had an answer for you. I think the demographics of people leading clubs skews older. You know, I'm under 40. I think I'm very much in the minority when it comes to people in leadership positions at European football clubs. I think to the credit of clubs and sports organizations in North America, you know, whether it's MLS or other organizations, they're much more forward thinking when it comes to hiring people, bringing in new ideas, looking at things like data. But European football, it's just because these clubs are not looked at as real businesses. They're looked at more social institutions. There's not the desire to do things any more efficiently and make better decisions and try to be progressive. That just doesn't exist really. And, you know, again, I think that's why the clubs that do it and do it well can have such a competitive advantage. You see Brighton, for instance, you know, they're beating Manchester United, they're beating West Ham. I mean, these are clubs spending 15, 20 times higher player wages than they are. How does that should not be possible, but it is possible because clubs are so lagging behind when it comes to these kind of decisions.
Do you see that movement? You talk about how the ownership is generally skewed older. Do you see this movement of younger owners, younger executives coming in and kind of making that use of data more prominent, and eventually we'll see it kind of throughout the entire European world of soccer, that is?
Maybe slowly. I think you're seeing more foreign investment, particularly from Americans who think of these clubs as businesses and want to do things more efficiently and do value data. So I think, yes, you're seeing things slowly change, but not fast enough and not at a scale that needs to happen, in all honesty.
Now, Jordan, you talk about how you're still young, under 40, but you still have experience. I mean, FC Helsinger with for a couple of years. I'm not too sure how many years have you been with the club.
3.5 years.
3.5 years. And in that time, what do you think is the biggest lesson that you've learned as an owner and someone who is really working those day-to-day operations?
I think the biggest challenge is just running a business in a foreign country. It's almost not football related. I think it's very easy for an American to say, you know, I've owned an NFL team or I owned an American sports team. And, you know, that will translate well to me owning a European football club. And not only is it really challenging to run a business in Europe, but the dynamics of European football are so different, whether it's relegation, whether it's a domestic player transfer market, whether it's just the way these clubs are run, it's just so different. And I think, you know, as exciting and as fun as what I do is, and I do really enjoy it, most of people would be surprised if they knew what I did on a daily basis. Most of the things I'm dealing with are payroll taxes and dealing with work permits for foreign players and dealing just kind of with the minutiae of running a business in a foreign country. And that can be very challenging on one hand, just the business side. And then the other hand is just the cultural side, whether it's your employees or whether it's your supporters or sponsors or fans. You know, we're in Scandinavia. These are socialist countries, and the people there look at the world in a very different way than we do as Americans. And I think it's about, how do you merge your way of thinking from an American perspective? Because these clubs do need to be run more efficiently, do need to be run like businesses, and decisions do need to be better. But also understanding that you can't just come in as American and say, hey, we're just going to do everything we want. We have been, you know, we're Americans, we're going to do whatever we want, because that doesn't work either. So I think the learning curve for me was kind of merging the domestic, the Danish way of running a club and running a business with my American mindset, finding that happy balance, which we don't always get to, but finding that right balance in terms of making decisions. And I think that's the hardest thing that most American, particularly foreign ownership groups, have in European football.
Now, using this American mindset, I'm curious where you see Helsinger in, say, 5 years, maybe double the time that you've been there right now. Where do you see, first of all, where are your ambitions with Helsinger? And then where do you realistically see the club in 5 years' time?
I mean, our ambition has always been to have a stable, self-sufficient club. And that obviously was difficult with COVID and all that kind of stuff. But we, you know, we've been in the top four in the Danish first division for 2 seasons running, which is not easy. I think obviously within 5 years, the goal is to get up to the Superliga, which was also not easy. I think the amount of money being spent at the higher divisions in a place like Denmark is significantly more than we're spending. You know, we're in the bottom three of player payroll in the division we're in, let alone the higher division. So I think, to me, I think it's a mistake when clubs in European football say, you know, we're going to get promoted in 3 years or this or that. It's very difficult to put timelines on these kind of things. But I think ultimately, of course, the goal being in a place like Scandinavia is to be in the Superliga and have a self-sufficient club. And there, of course, are limitations with this club. I get asked about, you know, are you going to go for Europe? And I'm like, that's not realistic. We're a small club in a small community. The amount of money that we need to get spent to get into Europe in a place like Denmark would be exorbitant. We'd have to go up against these huge clubs like FC Copenhagen and Brøndby spending, you know, 100 times more on player payroll. So I think for us, self-sustainability, it's getting the Superliga, and then, you know, whether it's with the current group or myself, it's scaling and then doing, replicating the success we've had and learning experiences what we've had in Denmark to a bigger league and a bigger club. Because that, to answer your question from earlier, why didn't we go to a bigger league? You know, the idea was, you know, let's learn and make mistakes at a smaller club at a smaller scale, and then we can go to a bigger league and then learn. Because I couldn't imagine an American group going into the Premier League, no experience whatsoever in terms of how these clubs are run or what you're supposed to do. Now, being on the ground in Europe for 3.5 years, you know, I feel like I have the tools necessary to have success at a bigger club. I think a lot of Americans in particular overestimate the amount of experience needed, or underestimate the amount of experience needed to run these clubs and run them well.
It's interesting because Chelsea obviously being taken over by a new American over Manchester United. They have some opinions about their American owners. Jordan, I'll wrap up with this. I just want to know about your experience in Denmark. What has been your favorite part about being an owner and chairman for Helsinger in the Danish First Division?
Yeah, I mean, my favorite part, look, being an American in European football in a leadership position is an honor and a privilege. There's very, very few Americans. We talk about American players, but whether it's coaches or CEOs or people on the ownership side, I kind of have to pinch myself sometimes and realize, look, yeah, we're not Manchester United here, but being able to do what I do in European football is incredible. And, for me, that, whether that is, difficult in terms of getting on a plane and, getting over to Europe or getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning because of the time difference, all those sacrifices are worth it because at the end of the day, it's such an incredible experience. And, I think the one thing that stands out for me is when we did get promoted from the second division to the first division. And even though, we were the favorites, I would say, I think that was such an amazing accomplishment. It's, I'm sure you guys have other podcasts talking about promotion and relegation in the US, but I think I'm such a proponent of the fact that if you do all the right things, if you make the right decisions, you bring in the right players, the right coaches, you have the right data system, and you win games, you get promoted, it's almost this validation that you've done a good job and you've done well. Whereas I think in other leagues, yeah, I guess in MLS, for instance, you can make the playoffs and win the championship. But it was such a real validation for us when we got promoted. And then obviously finishing in the top four is also validation for us. So, I think those are all satisfying things for me. And yeah, it's a fun experience. And, we'll see where the future takes us.
Yeah, we should see. I mean, as an American, you gained a fan for Helsinger, rooting for you guys to get promoted to the Super League of this season. Should be a fun one to follow.
Cool. Thanks for having me, Kyle. Appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure, Jordan. Have a good one.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.